and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 220 for Friday, March 26th. My name is Jim Race, and I'm here with Martin Darlington. How are you, Martin?
I'm very, very good this week, and really looking forward to this. The season's about to really get underway, pick up, move forward. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to a great show.
Yeah, I think this is the proverbial tipping point, or where we explode into action, and, you know, where my feet are tapping on the floor and my fingers are tapping on the desk, and I know that we're getting underway. You know, we've got a great second race coming up at Portimao this weekend. We've got Qatar right around the corner. There's BSB coming up. AMA is running this weekend down at Fontana in Southern California, so very exciting, probably crazily draining. a whole bunch of stories coming up for us, and we'll have our hands full trying to get it all organized, but we'll try and bring it to you, our folks out in MotoGPOD land. So I just want to mention, we do have one interview today, and it's a very cool one, and kind of a continuation of just a phone call that I had last week with Azhar Hussain, the CEO of TTX GP. And we go into a fair bit more detail, talk about a bunch of stuff, and I found it really fun and very interesting, and I hope you guys do too. You'd mentioned a listener email to me.
Yeah, it was Daryl McGrath who emailed us, and he mentioned that the YouTube footage of Jamie Whittam and Carl Fogarty on the RGV 250 and can't remember what Foggy was riding now.
VFR 400,
of course. And we'd mentioned it to Julian during the year. You mentioned it to Julian on the interview last week, and he said, "Oh, I don't recall that." And Daryl very kindly pointed out that the commentary was actually provided by Steve Parrish and Barry Nutley. And as soon as I saw that name, I thought, "Goodness, I remember Barry Nutley, because he used to do all the British-based race commentary," and you think, "Well, where is he? Well, you know, what's he doing now?" But that's why Julian wouldn't have remembered it, because it was done by Stephen Barry. But stuff again, I know I've mentioned it before, but I'm just finding it fascinating seeing all the feedback that we get from listeners, and it's someone out there will know pretty much any question we could throw out about motorcycle racing over the last, I don't know, probably 50 years. Someone out there will know what, you know, Mike Harewood's shoe size was. And it's brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. So thank you very much, Daryl. And you know, guys, keep it coming.
Yeah, not only did they know, but they'll actually go out of their way to let us know, which I think is very cool. Because it'd be so easy to go, no, they're wrong. But, you know, if you write in and you're not too brutal, I may actually talk about what you told us.
Yeah. No, but when I started listening, you know, several years ago, and there's something about getting a name check, and maybe it's just me, maybe I'm just like a complete fanboy, but there's something about getting a name check, and you think, "Hey, you know, I thought of something."
That's me.
And it's cool. I loved it.
Well, you know, eventually you can see what kind of trouble that's going to get you into.
Oh, yeah.
Next thing you know, you've got a poorly paid job with a crazy co-host, right?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, sorry, you said you mentioned paid.
I said poorly paid.
Yeah.
Which can define anything from complete abject poverty to some unknown figure. Anyway.
Let's get into our topics of the day, I think.
Okay. This is just kind of a general one, but one of my favorite circuits, and you know, we've only had a few races from there, but it still blows me away to this day. And every rider I talk to feels pretty much the same way, is Portimao in Portugal. And so race two is coming up this weekend for World Superbike and World Supersport. And I think there's going to be a very interesting panoply of characters at the front, a little bit different than what we saw at PI, because there's some people that actually run really well at Portimao. So I'm looking forward to this weekend. And frankly, by the time this show is on, and I hate always saying that, but you know, we have to do some pre-recording on this show just to make sure that it even exists come Friday or Saturday, sometimes it is that we'll already have results. We'll already have at least practice day one, and I'm really looking forward to this weekend. I really am. This should be a great weekend. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a really special track. I think it. Some people survive it, and some people absolutely relish it. And I mean, again, going back to, you know, when I was listening to the guys talking to yourself and Jules and Bob, and you used to think, on a Friday, I'm listening to these guys having to stick their necks on the block and say, I think this will happen, this will happen. Within a day or two, you know whether they were right or wrong. And it was spooky how often they get it right. But, you know, you look at it and you just think, okay, we've got so little data from Portimao. You know, it's the only third year they've been running there. But for me, and again, obviously, I have a bit of a Brit bias. We've got seven Brits running in the World Superbikes this year. There are what, three... four in the World Supersports. Johnny Ray, second and third in the races last year. He was the fastest in both the winter tests. Clearly, absolutely loves this circuit. Didn't have the best of times at PI. I'm really, really expecting that Johnny is going to be front and centre when it comes to this weekend. Shaky Byrne.
Yep. I was just going to say the same thing. I'm like, in preseason testing there, he was quite quick. So
yeah. And then they missed the October test. He was third in January. Last year's test results were very good. But by the time they got to the race last year, it being the last race of the season, the bike was completely knackered. You know, he'd been left so far behind on development. The team was skint. They had to drop the second rider. They had no money left. There'd been very little development. And it kind of skewed the results, I think.
Wasn't Cheka quick at Portimao, this January Portimao test this year too, I think?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think the Altair team have clearly got much greater resources behind them than Shaky's team last year, was it Sterile Garden? It started as Sterile Garden, isn't it?
Right, and it continued that way, but if you remember mid-season, Sterile Garden went over to
Yamaha.
Also sponsor Yamaha, so you know that that was going to be a money drain.
Yeah.
And you know, our friend from a few weeks ago, and I haven't interviewed him this week, so I'm not sure if that's a bad sign, but Leon Haslam goes well here as well. So
yeah, he was fourth in October, second in January. He's going great guns. His confidence has got to be absolutely sky high. Sylvain Guintoli, this is going to be his first time racing there, although obviously he'd have had the tests. Leon, I expect to be pretty much front-running. But it was interesting when you look at the Ducatis that they had a 1-2 in race two at the end of last year. Obviously, Norrie crashed out in the first race, and Fabrizio was fifth, I think, fifth or sixth. But I'm not sure how much, because it was the last race, Norrie had absolutely nothing to lose. He had to win that last race and hope that something awful happened to Ben. And obviously, it didn't.
If you drag back to the prior year, who dominated those races? Well, it was Bayless. And so it's clear the Ducati has something for the track. But you say that, and then what you have to remember is that the guys on the I4s, or the V4s, for that matter, obviously have become aware of that and have made plenty of changes over the winter season, both mapping and in chassis adjustments to be prepared for that, because nobody wants to have a bike that is an underachiever at the track. So I suspect we'll see a fair amount of parity this year, and that's what I'm looking forward to.
The other interesting one is you think about World Supersport last year, and I haven't got the results to hand, but I remember Cal Crutcher coming away saying, I love that track.
Yeah.
That track suits me. Now, the only downside with that is the R6 clearly is a lot easier to get round corners than the R1. So how he's going to cope with a circuit like that on the R1, I'm not sure, but as far as the track goes, I suspect that Cal Crutchley will be looking forward to it.
I think so, too. And, you know, there's a nice step down, if you will, into the World Supersport Series. We know that another fan of the show, Eugene Laverty, won there last year by going away with about a four-second lead. And it clearly is, obviously, it's the sponsor's track, and he's coming back ready to fight. And I truly think that from what he said to us earlier in the year, that his protagonists really are Kenan Safwoglu and Johan Lescours. And my prediction that I threw out there, and I think it may also come true, is the other Tenkata CBR600R, piloted by Kei Piro, it is going to continue to be a force. It looked like it was going to be very interesting. Now, the results that they had at PI certainly were not necessarily of their making, because they ended up going out on oil that was laid down by, sorry, Chaz, but yeah, looked like it came out of your bike. Chaz may be strong there as well. All fun. Should be.
It's something that what you read about the Triumph suggests that it's the sort of circuit that should suit the Triumph, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how they get on. The other interesting thing that I read earlier this week was Simon Buckmaster, who's the team principal of the Park Hogar team, absolutely buzzing. I mean, it's not a spoke. I didn't hear his words, but I read them, and you can see that the whole team are really, really confident, really excited, and I think they're looking at Eugene. I know it's obviously early days, and he makes it quite clear that we've got a long way to go. There's a lot of great riders and great packages out there. But, you know, it really comes across that they're thinking, right, last year was close. This year, you know, we're going to grab this by the neck and really run with it.
It was kind of funny because Simon started writing his missives, I think, or at least they started making it into the mainstream media, or at least making it to me, about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And last year when I was – and I love them. You know, there's a fair amount of bravado in them. Mm-hmm. But last year at Miller, we were getting ready for the race. I was back at the Park Gallagher pit, and as we're walking up, I walked up there with Simon, and I was chatting with him. And I said, I really like those pieces that you write, because they kind of get across, you know, almost the proper amount of arrogance and courage all at the same time. And he kind of chuckled. He's like,
yeah.
All right. Enough about Portimao. It's going to happen. Come next week, we will report all of the results and all of the thrills and chills, and we've got some racing going on. You ready to move on?
The only last thing I'd say about Portimao is it really hit me when I was looking at the last year's stats, and we had 9 DNFs in race 1 and 6 in race 2.
True.
And it does kind of hit you that how technical and tricky a track it can be. I hope we don't have anything near that this year, but you know, it's a bit of a meat grinder. But like you say, by the next show, we'll have some results to talk about.
We will know. And while you were mentioning that, I actually just popped in to take a peek at the weather. And it looks like it's actually going to be on the coolish side. Not cold by any measure. Fahrenheit, 62 degrees, 63, 64, and cloudy on Sunday. It's supposed to rain on Thursday. Hopefully that won't carry over.
Yeah.
But no, actually, this isn't too bad. This is actually kind of pleasant, frankly, because it was baking hot there when they had the race later in the season last year, or the last race of the year. So this should be good. Now, the interesting thing about that is, and it's a good thing they had a test not so long ago, because you can't carry over your race data when you go from a hot track to a cool track.
No, it's going to make an enormous difference, I'd imagine.
It will, but, I mean, there's some things you can carry over, some of the suspension settings, but I don't think you'll have a problem with it. Most everybody's got a fair amount of data. All right, you know, we go on and on about this particular race, but let's just let it unfold before us, and we'll talk about it next week.
A-firm.
Okay, so very, very cool about Portimao. Looking forward to it. Let's go ahead at this point and roll right into the interview with Azhar Hussain, because that too is timely, and I'd really like to get that out there for people to hear. And what you're going to find is that he's kind of got a bit of an infectious enthusiasm, as you will. So we'll go into that. We'll come back and chit-chat about that for a bit, and then we'll talk about the testing at Qatar. You ready?
Let's go.
All right, roll on. Hey, this is Jim Race for MotoGPOD, and I've got on the line with me Azhar Hussain, the CEO of the TTX GP series. How are you today, or tonight for you, Azhar?
Hello, Jim. Thank you for having us on board, and then hello to your listeners. Just surviving another day in the trenches. We are 4 days away from our closing date for the U.S. Championship, and we're just working now to get that closed away and sorted.
And so and we always kind of joke that we're time travelers here. The closing date is the 29th, is that?
You're absolutely right. It's March the 29th is the closing date for the championship and for the first round. For those teams that want to enter individual rounds, those closing dates will then follow subsequently for each round. But for the championship and for Infineon, it's March 29th. For our European leg, the UK closing dates and the Italian closing dates are on the same day. That's April 30th.
Okay. That's good to know. And hopefully there's a little wiggle room on that. I think our this show is actually going to come out on the 28th, late on the 28th, and we'll see who gets on it. But we did talk about it last week as well, and hopefully that kind of helped. There's something – you and I had a conversation last week that we didn't record for the show, to me it was very, very fascinating. And I just want to zip through this briefly. Tell me about your background. I mean, how did you end up in the spot that you're in? And specifically, you know, what your engineering and software and all that background is. Because to me, that's fascinating. And frankly, it's because I'm in the same business.
So we started off in the consumer electronics and telecoms business, and that's been our stock and trade for the last decade. And my very, very, very first company was a software company that we were selling software into the national telecoms operator here, which is BT. And from then we went on, we built our own mobile phone. Then we got into satellite communications. So that's been really our track. Somewhere along the journey, I became a biker, loved biking. I've been riding bikes for coming on 10 years now, 10, 11 years. And thoroughly enjoy it, but I think it's fair to say I'm a fair weather rider. You know, I'm not hardcore by any stretch. I ride just for pleasure and tend to be large bikes. So my current bike right now is a 1800 cc cruiser.
Whoa!
So that's the kind of thing V-twin that I'm part of. But one of the lucky opportunities we had is we got engaged with the Isle of Man through a technology deal that we were doing on Ireland, and through that deal we got involved with the government, and I had the idea of perhaps running a electric race, and we presented it to them, and they liked the idea, and we did a deal, and off it went. So June 2009 we had a very, very successful event, and off the back of that event we are now looking here in 2010 and beyond, 13 races across the world, and with absolutely more to come in 2011. But for this year, it's 13 events, with the first event kicking off on May 14th at Infineon. And in the UK, they kick off in Cadwell Park on July 3rd, and in Italy at Magione on June 27th. The best eight from every national series comes to our world final, which is in Albacete on October 24th, to be crowned our first TTHGP champion. And that's kind of where we are at the minute.
Very cool. I mean, part of this for me is actually very exciting, because your very first race this year is basically coming to my home circuit, which is, you know, about 60 miles away or 80 miles away. So I'm very pumped for that. It's like, oh boy. Come visit me first. And you and I had a conversation before this, which, as you well know, and I'll let our listeners just wonder about, that may lead to something very cool. So MotoGP OD listeners, stay tuned. You never know what's going to happen. You know, you've got a whole bunch of new teams that have sort of jumped on board too this week. At least two, maybe three that I know of. Tell me about that.
We've got a bunch of new teams, and so we have a new team announcement here in the UK. MRB Racing is one. In Italy, we've just announced Betty Moto, who's been a long-time Italian electric bike racer.
Yeah.
CRP, one of the manufacturers, their first successful testing happened in Monza a couple of days ago, and that video is now online, and the bike absolutely looks great. And that bike is now available for teams that want to take part in any of our championships. That bike is available to buy or to lease from CRP. The Mavizen bikes are coming along. They first bikes will start shipping to customers by April. and there's some really, really new exciting technology in there from brands, let's face it, you don't typically associate with motorsports, but you absolutely know are at the heart of high technology. So we'll be sharing more about that later. The bikes look great. The Mavazin bikes in particular now have a hot swappable, not just power pack, the entire drivetrain actually is swappable. You can swap the entire drivetrain in about 2 minutes. So if for track days, you can run a bike at a track and then within 2 minutes you can refresh the whole drivetrain and be away again.
That's crazy. So you just, there's a USB port you plug in, you move the whole thing out and you put it back.
Well, it's a little bit more. We'll be releasing some videos of this towards the back end of April.
Okay.
But essentially the entire center section of the bike drops away.
Wow.
You remove some pins, you take the chain off, the motors, controllers, everything are integrated onto a central column, which is pure carbon fiber. So if for those of you that may have seen the bike online, the TTX-02 is based on the RC8, and the engine was a stressed member of the frame. So what happens when the engine gets removed, we've replaced that with some really advanced composite material, and that material acts as a, not only does it hold the frame together, but it also acts as a place where the batteries, the motors, controllers, BMS, and all of that sits in there. And so when you can swap it, you can swap everything out in one go. But the bike looks great. It's the first bike that we know of will be shipping with touchscreens on interface. And as we promised, it will have Wi-Fi and Bluetooth and GPS all built into the bike. The bike also has some additional features which allow you to do, for example, onboard camera ride-alongs, but integrate in with engine track information. So the idea is not only do you get a camera, which is a ride-along, but you also know what the hell's going on at that moment. And that all gets tracked into the bike. So it's quite a nifty piece of kit. It's all programmable, remotely accessible. It takes biking in a new direction. Another product that we're launching here in the UK, which we're calling the Tech Hotel, is a concept where we're supporting teams for their logistic needs. And essentially the way that works is because you now no longer need to have a, you no longer need to have an engine rebuild, let's say after every race, that's no longer something you need to do. So why do you need to have your bike? So we can now move and hold and store your bike for racing. And the idea is you have a race bike and you have a bike back at base, and you can develop and refine your technology techniques at the bike back at base, and then save all your settings onto a USB stick, and then come to the race circuit and clone the bike on the race so it's the same as the bike back at base. Any changes you make to controllers and motors, well, frankly speaking, they're very small. So you can carry a motor and a controller in your hand luggage, or in your luggage to check in on the plane. So you can actually fly to the circuit. You don't have to worry about transporting bikes around. So that's proving to be a very popular service, and a number of teams will be taking that up here in the UK.
You know, I think a lot of more traditional internal combustion folks, they're really gearheads, if you think about it, or motorheads, if you want to even go farther down that path. But anybody that actually does listen to this podcast and is interested in the TTX GP, without a doubt, has a very serious techie bent. And I hear descriptions like you just mentioned, and stuff like that just makes you go, that's freaking cool. I mean, being able to clone a bike, or, you know, at least clone the settings for a bike. You know, granted, you can do that with mapping on a traditional bike, but it's, you know what? Have you seen the trailer for Tron 2 yet?
I have. Those bikes are phenomenal. It's a great looking trailer, that actually.
Yeah. It just seems like it's, you know, heading slightly down the path there. You know, granted, we're still in the baby steps. All right, before I get all pie in the sky here with you, great for the new teams. Totally excited. People that are out there, if you get this beforehand, please jump on it. Maybe Azar and the series can give you some wiggle room if you're from the States, but I'm not even going to say that.
One thing I would say very quickly, Jim, is to let your listeners know there's never been a more affordable way to get into an international championship.
Very true.
In terms of what you're getting out of it, because there's a number of different, let's say, parameters if you're a team you want to be thinking about. A, what does it cost to run? What do I get out of it this year? More importantly, what do I get out of it for the future, for my team, for my people, for my technology, for my business? This year, you are looking. Any team that enters our U.S. Championship, you are really looking at making history on an incredible global stage. And the version one of whatever you have this year, even if you're a Honda or a Yamaha or whatever, or you're a small guy who's built something, frankly, everybody will have to go through a version one. And there is such a profound change. It's one of the challenges I think we have as an industry is, because the final product has two wheels and a seat and so on, the thinking is, oh, okay, they've taken the petrol engine out and they've put in a battery and that's it. So if it's a car, because a Tesla looks like a Lotus, the presumption is, well, it's not that big a deal. But actually, when you get into it, the engineering involved is such a difference at a DNA level that anybody who takes part in GTHP this year is literally on the curve of the future. And the lessons they take away from us this year will not only withstand them in years to come, but are incredibly marketable, not only on a technical skill level, but there is so much intellectual property to create, to protect, to own, to monetize, and people should consider, and I hope they do, it's one of our certain hopes, is TTHGP isn't just a platform to race, but it's also a platform of incredible research and development. And certainly, the teams that make it through Albacete will be, I can probably say this, some of the most advanced teams in motorized, in electric transport in the world. And they will prove it, and they'll have a badge and a standard to be measured against, which will be pretty high.
I really think that certainly from where I am currently at, which is the Sacramento area, which in theory is supposed to be a green capital, if you will, that there isn't anything coming out of here, but there is a fair amount coming out of the Bay Area, but we'll see. Do me a favor, give me and try and limit this if you can, and I know it's going to be difficult, to about a 3 to 4 minute flyby of the TEO concept.
So, not only did we want to reboot what was happening on the track, but as we've got into this series more and more, we've had to reboot what happens off the track. The business model of motorsports is challenging, I would say, for small teams and large teams to really get started. So we've created this concept called TEO, which stands for trust.egrandprix.org. And this concept is a legal entity separate from TTHGP, which is made up of teams that race in TTHGP. And what happens is that we as a company have given over a huge amount of our shares, equity, into this partnership. So this year it's 30% of our company, and over the course of the next 10 years it will grow and grow and grow. So ultimately it will be at least 70% of the company will be owned by this trust. The trust itself is ultimately owned by the teams that take part in TTHGP. And it's got its own governing body, it's got its own arbitration committee, there's a very open voting process. But the key thing is this, all the money that comes into TTHGP, a portion of the dividends go to all the teams based on how much you've raised. Now, you can't buy your way into TEO. It's very, very strongly mandated. The only way to get into TEO is to race. And it's about participation, not about where you finish on the podium. So the more bikes you have at the grid that qualify and finish, the more points you own of the TEO. There's a mechanism in there to stop any one team becoming too dominant, and there's a mechanism in there which is very transparent and open of what happens if you stop racing. So if you stop racing, after 3 years, you'll automatically exit the partnership. So every year you don't race, you lose a third of what you have, so your income diminishes over time. This year, if you take part in TTHGP, you get accelerated bonuses. So in recognition of the fact that it's our first year, you will get more this year than you will in any future years. So it's this. What we're trying to say is, look, this partnership can only be strong as strong as those people who take part. And I think the tagline for TEO is, whilst we race as individuals, we win as a team.
Yep.
And that's really what this is about, is to give a share of the ownership, the rewards, the value, the governance, back to the people who make it what it is. And to do it in a sensible way, with a legally defined mechanism, with a way for money to be distributed. I mean, one of the big things, challenges I would say for teams today is that if you're a motorsport team, you're worried year to year. You have your sponsorship deal this year, and you don't know if it's going to be back next year. So it's very hard for you as a team to develop as the company, the infrastructure, the team, the people, the buildings, the technology that can really give you a longer-term future, because you have no stability in your revenue stream. So TEO is really designed to give teams who become part of it a regular income. As long as they keep racing, they get an income. And this is on top of any private deals that they have for sponsorships and endorsements and whatever commercial deal they have. That remains theirs. This is a completely separate revenue stream which teams can depend on year on year on year, and which they control and they can manage. And that's the idea of TEO. It's a reboot, really, of the relationship between a team and the series, and ultimately everybody else involved. I mean, you need a lot of stakeholders to make motorsport happen. And TEO is a start of saying, look, we need to rethink that. We need to rethink that relationship and say, look, it can't just be a promoter who owns everything and the teams who have to pay for everything. And that seems like a very unbalanced relationship. And TEO is an attempt to redress that and say, look, if in 10 years' time we become a billion-dollar franchise, which I hope, which I believe, and we're working towards being, then it's nothing wrong with saying 70% of that income should go to the teams who made it what it is. At the end of the day, they are the core of any series, the teams, and they need to be there, and they need to be stable, and need to be financially strong. And the only way to do that is to bring them under a larger vehicle. Because not every team is commercially, let's say, astute, I would say. You know, teams have, some of them just want to race. But whatever your motivation, you all need money.
Sure.
And if the teams need money, we need a way of helping them. And this, that's what TEO is about.
There's that classic saying in racing, which is, you know, how do you make $1 million in racing? Well, start with $2 million.
at least. but here's the thing. If you make it right, if you get the balance right, then it can be profitable for everybody. I mean, MotoGP has shown that, and the Formula One has shown that. And there is no reason why we, with TTHGP, you're not looking at the next future MotoGP.
Right.
Why aren't you looking at the next Formula One? At the end of the day, you have no chance as teams to own a piece of that action. So here's a way of, and one of the things we're very keen on is making it very open and very transparent. I think the days of trying to do deals behind, in quiet rooms and all of that, I think, A, they've gone, and they're not really sustainable in the world we live in today. You need to really re-engage in a more open and transparent manner. Also, to be fair, the world that Formula One and MotoGP grew up in, that no longer exists. You know, you don't have four networks, only four networks. The TV audience is fragmented all over the place. You're now looking at a range of revenue streams which are not just all TV. And you need a collective to be able to effectively monetize that and then be able to offer that to teams in a sustainable, intelligent way.
Yeah, I think you know, there are some people that naysay a lot of things, but again, if it's somebody that's listening to this show, they're already kind of slightly cutting edge at a certain point, and you're taking it beyond, and a lot of people are going to have trouble digesting that, but I've kind of drank the Kool-Aid a little bit at this point. And
if you're a team, it's a one-way bet.
Yeah,
well, it's a one-way bet for you. It's a and the concept is you race to own.
Yeah. Let me point something out to you, because this is absolutely key. I completely know what it is like as a racer to have to struggle to put together a team and to have to try and put together everything you need, not only through sponsorship. And I guess that's a peripheral question. Are you doing anything for contingency or anything like that? Do you have any deals coming up on that order?
In terms of sponsors?
Contingency for, say, with various, you know, motor manufacturers, tire suppliers, et cetera, et cetera.
Watch this space.
Okay.
If you're in motorsports, you know that these things are...
They're always ongoing. You
know, yeah, they're ongoing, and they're a little bit complicated and challenging, but we are clearly working on all of those areas. And one thing I can say is that you can fully expect TTHGP to get a television deal. We certainly will be online, and we're now looking at different ways. So all the teams that enter this year will get global exposure. And frankly, this is the world's first world championship of its kind on this scale. TTHGP today is, I think it's fair to say, the single most prominent brand name in zero-carbon motorsports in the world. So just being part of it this year will mean that you've already kicked off to a wonderful start as a team.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know, I probably have another half dozen questions that I could ask you, but I need to roll on to my next caller.
Sure.
I think we should talk again. And in fact, hold on with me after this call, because I do have some offline questions. That
I all right.
Thanks again for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And best of luck moving forward. And we will talk to you again soon.
Thank you. And I just want to shout out to your listeners. Please, we welcome all of you. We invite you all to our races. We hope to see you there, and it'll be wonderful to have you along as part of our journey.
Yeah, I want to see the bikes at Cadwell. That's where I want to see them. We'll see how it goes. Thanks again, Azar. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Jim.
Well, big thanks again to Azar for that. Very, very cool to kind of get an inside feel, and it really is cutting-edge stuff, and to have him be able to put that together for us is fantastic. I did that recording just before I talked to you, Martin, and so I really haven't had a chance to fully analyze it in my head, nor have you even had a chance to listen to the whole bit. So what I will say, folks out there, is, you know, Take what you will and love some feedback on it. I think the TTXGP has a real possibility to be a fantastic series, and especially being a international series with 13 races, if you choose to do that. So let's see where it goes.
Yeah, I think there's a huge temptation to go, oh, it's new, no, we like the status quo. But I think we have to accept that in the fullness of time, we're going to have to look for alternative forms of propulsion. This may well be the future. And, you know, let's invest in it now. And not necessarily financially, but, you know, with interest, with time and support. And, you know, let's get it up and running.
Indeed. And I see that with a fair amount of new teams coming in and a fair amount of very talented racers that are participating. And there's a few little nuggets that who knows what's going to happen. We might have some interesting news, but stay tuned, because we'll have to see. But I hope you enjoyed that. Great interview, and hopefully we'll be talking to him again soon.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Let's run through to Qatar kind of quickly, because there's a fair amount of other stuff that I want to get to as well.
Sure. Well, the test happened, and when you look at the top of the timesheets, there ain't no big surprises. It's Rossi and Stoner again. Casey Stoner just tipping Valentino for the fastest time, but the two of them consistently throughout the weekend were, you know, they were up there. No one was going to shift them. I made some brave predictions that Jorge Lorenzo would be in the top three. Didn't quite work out that way, but he's very bullish. He's very confident about his chances when the race comes round. He reckons he'll be back to fitness. He was getting three or four laps at a time in, then having to come back in and have a bit of massage or treatment on the injured hand. And it also came out that how he injured it wasn't quite motocross. It was a 10-horsepower... I'm trying to think if it was a motocrossing bike, but it was on a mini road circuit, and he was training with Carlos Checa, and he sort of said, probably got a bit too competitive, and he put it down, and he's broken his hand. I think far more interesting what was going on elsewhere, and to stick with the Yamaha theme with Rossi and Lorenzo, Colin and Ben Spies both doing very well. Ben Spies just keeps looking very, very good. And there's a fantastic quote from Colin, which was, "It's really pissing me off that these assholes up front are so fast." And, yeah, you just think, oh, this guy is absolute quote gold.
And speaking of that, just minutes, literally minutes before you and I went to record this show, good old Yamaha, I think it's Yamaha Motors Company, released another one of their awesome video series on YouTube, which is the Ben and Colin Mancation or Texas road trip that is, I'm not even sure how to describe it. It's as good as the Ben Spies method, where he's describing certain tracks as being like animals. And
They play up the caricatures of their characters so well.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm sure everyone's seen the, and it's still available on YouTube, the Yamaha last year when they had Rossi, Toseland, Lorenzo, and Spies.
Yeah.
Edwards, all with the jobs they do at Yamaha HQ in between races. And to be able to send themselves up. I mean, we talked about it earlier, and I just think this really highlights what Valentino wrote in his book, the, What If I Hadn't Tried It autobiography. And he said, I went to Yamaha and found there is a major Japanese corporation who are very serious about racing, and yet they have fun when they're doing it. And it kind of sums them up. I love that thing of that self-deprecating humor. And it's yet, like you say, it's another example of, yeah, they're going to keep on churning them out.
Yeah, it's just this one had literally. Martin and I had already gotten on the phone and we were ready to start recording the show. And I'm like, wait, you have to watch this. I haven't watched it yet, but I know it's going to be good. So we'll have a link up to that. And frankly, by the time this show gets out, that thing's going to have already gone viral in the motorcycle community. So you'll probably have seen it, but. Hey, we saw it first, so yeah. Yeah, no, that was great. So even more, you know, let me take a step back. And yeah, it was totally funny. Colin is like the quote rocket.
Yeah.
Ben was looking great, and we'll come back to that in a moment. But how do I say this in a polite manner without coming across as I guess I just say it. Honda's still in trouble.
Yeah. But some of the quotes coming out, I think, are... I mean, we've all got used to the fact that the top racers, you know, that they get very PR briefed, they get very careful about what they say, except for Colin, obviously. I think Colin might be briefed, but if he is, he's not in the language he speaks.
I think...
But you've got things...
Colin is his own PR agent.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Marco Simoncelli. And this is what a headline writer will do in a newspaper, so I'm probably, you know, it might be taken out of context, but he says, one of the things he said was, look, it's too early to give up, and you think, well, hang on, you know, he says, in fact, the full quote is, it's too early to give up, but if I'm honest, our situation is a disaster. And this is from Marco Simoncelli, who's one of the most confident, bullish, you know, very, very talented writer. Absolutely no doubt about that. I read that and I just thought, ouch.
That kind of sounds...
That's not good.
kind of sounds like another Marco 2 years ago, doesn't it?
Well, and speaking of Marco, his headline in MCN this week, "I'm in deep shit." It was interesting because that follows up an interview he did a week ago where he said, "Look, I'm very aware. I'm 27. At one stage, I was second in the world championship, and now this is make or break. If I don't produce this year, then that could be the end of me in Major GP." Danny Pedrosa, who just sounds completely despondent, he said, "No, it's not looking good. What else can I say?"
You know, I think the situation with Danny is that, you know, Dovey, mid-late last year, ended up as the Olin's test guy, right? When they popped those on. Danny, in the meantime, and somebody will correct me if I'm wrong, I think stuck with the Showas through the end of the season.
Yeah.
And now, this year, he is on the Olin's, and it seems that he's not been able to come to grips with them yet. There's a pun in there somewhere, isn't there?
Yeah, definitely. So this is the bit that I think throws those three guys a real curveball, is the fact that Dovey actually had a really positive test.
Yeah.
I mean, he's putting it down. He's saying as soon... Now, he implies, or I infer from what he said, that it was his decision. He was offered to go to Olin's. Now, how much pressure was applied, obviously we won't know. Knowing HRC, or from the outside at least, you suspect a fair amount of pressure. But it kind of makes sense. He said, "Look, they said to us, next year we're going to be running on Olin's. Do you want to start running on them now?" And he thought, well,
why not?
You know, what have I got to lose? Why would I stick with something that won't be there next year, whereas if I can get used to them now? Now, there is possibly an argument that Danny was ahead of him in the championship. He had more to fight for in the championship. He'd had that breakthrough injury. Dovey, maybe he thought, well, I've got nothing to lose. He went across. But he's actually had a pretty darn good test. And it almost becomes the why can only Casey Stoner ride the Ducati and no one else can, despite the fact that we know they're talented riders. You know, and I wonder if Dovey sat there thinking, and he's also made these points about Honda won't take the input from only one rider to develop this bike, and that's his ambition, that they listen to him as much as they do Danny. Well, that's not exactly going to make Danny particularly happy, I wouldn't think. But he also, Dovey stresses that HRC have the capability to go in two directions at the same time on the same bike, as far as development goes.
Well, so take this into mind, too. And this is kind of a variable that we haven't had to deal with in the past with the Repsol team, is they've got a fair amount of new personnel in their garage. And so integrating that into what was an existing system, and also probably clearly a pretty serious shift in electronics. And this has happened before, specifically with Pedrosa, is at a certain point, he said, "No, I want the bike I had before." So that may happen while they continue to try and test and develop. It's hard to say. You know, I could dwell on Honda all day, but I'd rather keep things moving. And you had a great note in here that I just reread about Loris.
Oh, this actually caused a bit of friction. There were some questions asked about Ducati, because the day before the test started, they were doing photo shoots, as were Suzuki. But no one kicked off about Suzuki, probably because no one sees them as serious contenders. We'll see how accurate that is or not. That, you know, they were getting some free track time, but it was all just the PR stuff. And one of the things the Suzuki guys did, they did some low-speed laps. And Loris did it a couple of laps of the Los Isles circuit at sort of 20 to 30 miles an hour, so they could get, you know, some really nice high-definition pictures. Then they said, right, now can you go out and do a couple of quick laps? At which point he had to stop and throw up because he'd got motion sickness doing the slow laps. And I just thought, that's got to be one of the weirdest stories that I've ever read about MotoGP. The dawdling Suzuki gives Caparossi motion sickness was the MCN headline. It just made me laugh.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, there is a parallel there that doesn't exactly quite fit, but still just very, very strange. All right, keep going.
Yeah. Another point, I mean, there were an awful lot of crashes at turn two. There were a lot of crashes throughout the testing. And one of the things the guy said is they all started at a similar time. And it was put down to, with a very high humidity, when the temperature drops to a certain point, and anyone who's aviation aware will know about the relationship between temperature and dew point, and without something to blow it away, i.e. wind, that lands as dew. So we had a lot of dew forming late evening, and a lot of the Riders Safety Commission have called for an earlier start time for the race, because they said the problem is with this dew, you get no, I mean, Casey Stoner has a quote, says you get no warning on one lap that your next lap, you need to be careful. And people were going in, doing exactly what they'd done the lap before, and the front was just washing out because of this dew falling. The problem is that does that fit with worldwide TV schedules?
Well, and I think it does enough, which, you know.
I mean, Valentino said, look, let's bring it forward an hour.
Mm-hmm.
Like 1 hour before, and you're going to miss all those problems, because it was almost, I mean, this is the thing about being close, you know, the closer to the equator you are, the more things are predictable. You know, on the equator, the sun goes down at 6, it comes up at 6, it goes down at 6, there's never any variation. And so it is far more predictable than the Northern Hemisphere, where vagaries of weather and climate will make a lot more difference. So he said, just bring it forward an hour. And I can't see that would be a huge problem, except for scheduling with the TV companies. But it's who pays the piper. You know, who are Dorna going to be more indebted to, or to who do they feel they have to keep happier? The riders. There is an argument, it's the same for everyone, which was made by Ben Spies. He said, I think it could be a good idea, but it's the same for everyone. You know, if the track causes someone to fall, it's a shame, but, you know, we're all in the same boat. You know, that's on the back of him putting it down twice in very similar circumstances. But it'd be interesting to see how that one runs.
Yep. All right, next step.
Still with the test, Randy Depunier, reportedly delighted with his progress. He did really, really well. And I think we possibly, particularly after last season, I think we have to possibly box away, and hopefully not to be bought out and dusted off, the serial crasher reputation that he managed to get. And 2008, I think if my memory serves me, it was 32 crashes through the year in testing and racing. Yeah, not good.
Oh, but he did set a record.
Yeah. Probably not the sort you're going to, you know, get the shield down and polish off and show your grandkids.
But I like
Randy Depunier. I like his spirit. I just think he's just a likable chap. You know, he could be, you know, he's got these model good looks. I mean, Sharon always enjoys seeing him crash because he does the unzip. You know, and I remember Bob laughing about Grace from the Formula One pod saying, oh, I like it when Randy crashes because he shows his torso off. And, you know, he's obviously a very talented rider, but it was I think he almost became a bit of a, not a laughing stock, that's far too strong, but it was a bit of a, oh, here comes RDP.
Yeah, but we knew, I mean, last year was actually a very serious, and he popped that reputation away, which in a way, if you really think about it, LCR has very cyclic years with their MotoGP bikes. They had Casey Stoner, who was crashing his brains out on it in 2006.
And six, yeah.
And then obviously went over to the Ducati and surprised everybody in RDP.
No, 2000. Oh, hang on. Was it 2005?
Might have been 2005. But I mean, regardless,
yeah.
The next person to step on it, then the next year, RDP stepped on it. He didn't really crash that much then. But the following year, he crashes his brains out as well.
Yeah.
Last year was a great year for him. You know, he crashed on, you know, an average schedule, if you will. So, let's hope that the cycle does not continue. And I think we should be great. Hero, you know, while the Interwetten bike, it seems like it's still getting up to speed, and we've talked about this on and off over the last few weeks.
Yeah.
Yet another test bed seems like he's happy and they've got a bunch of work to do, but I have a feeling as the season ramps along and they get more data on that bike, because it is a little bit different than all the other RC212s, they'll have something to show us.
Yeah, and I do think, particularly after the interview with Julian Ryder last week,
mm-hmm.
week before, last week, you know, when as you said at the time, when Julian Ryder tips someone he's worth watching, you kind of listen, you think, yeah. But quite a detailed report from the Interwetten team, and they were saying, you know, they've got some more work to do on the rear, but they had some really good positive stuff they did with the front, and he's gone away. And apparently Hero is feeling very positive, you know, and it's strange. I mean, you get these team managers who say, oh, I've said this, I've said that. Going back to RDP, I loved the one last year, and they said, you know, we were, I can't remember his name, the LCR team boss, but he said, we're really happy with him.
Checking
we're
up.
Just trying, yeah, he said, we've just had a chat, and I'm encouraging him to try and crash less. You think, well, isn't that kind of generic advice for a racer? Yeah, crashing not very often has got to be quite a good thing. And it reminded me of the Valentino comments about Marco Simoncelli. And he said, all he has to understand, and you think, right, here comes the nugget, he said, is why he's crashing so much and why he's so slow. Well, yeah, thanks for that. That's really insightful. I think some of it probably was lost in translation. And the only other thing that about the MotoGP, not specifically about the test, was Kropotkin, MotoGPMatters.com, and David Emmett has done a really good article about the silly season as it's likely to develop, and he's made some predictions. And I don't know, should we have a quick run through them?
I think the best thing to do, because there's no such thing as a quick run through that.
No.
It would be to link to it, and it's MotoMattersNow.com. Just remember.
Of course, yeah.
We'll link to it and go ahead and read it. It's kind of a brave write, and I think that he did it perhaps a little bit tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
And so we'll just link to it. We like to provide information to you folks out there. You know, those of you that listen to us probably also read Moto Matters already anyway, but there may be a few of you that don't. And so we'll link to the article and take a read. I think we should move on to some of our miscellaneous stuff before we put this show once again into the stratosphere. I was hoping to keep it somewhere in the hour and a half range at the most. So I did want to mention this, and you and I chatted about this briefly before the show started. Stuart Easton, we had BSB Cadwell Park testing over this last weekend, and did crash at Charlie's Corner and apparently had a bit of a gash or a deep cut across the initial description was across the back of his knee, which if you think about it, sounds horrid because the only thing you can think of is, you know, ligaments and all that. It sounds like he did have a little bit of muscle damage, but did not get him as bad as we might have thought. They did take him to the hospital. They stitched him up, and he should be ready to go for Brands, which is great news because he's going to be one of the front runners, I think, this year.
Yeah, definitely. He's got a really strong season last year to build on. I mean, it's a bit like Leon in 2008. If you take his second half of his season in isolation, he's right up there.
Yeah.
No tendon or ligament damage. They expect him to line up at Brands Indy. And again, another of these pithy team manager press releases where he said, yeah, you know, you don't have to change gear that much at Brands Indy, so we don't think you'll have any problems, which kind of made me chuckle. But, you know, really relieved that, you know, we haven't had yet another season-affecting pre-season injury. So, hope Stuart gets back, you know, pretty soon.
And you mentioned something about the new Norton engine. I think I'd actually seen some test stand videos of those that might be on YouTube with the exhaust systems glowing red hot. And you know, they call it a 695cc, but with the rotaries, it's like how...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that decision has never been made to anybody's satisfaction, except for, well, to nobody's satisfaction, but, you know, 210 horsepower out of a 700cc bike is clearly very impressive. But the thing is if you're going to develop it, you know, there was a whole bunch of talk last year about running in the TT or in short circuits, and the thing never really made it out. So,
no, I mean, Michael Dunlop ran it, didn't he, last year, and never completed a lap.
Yeah.
He just had mechanical problem after mechanical problem. But
yeah, so keep going. Do not stop, and we'll see what we got. You had also a bit of Julian Simon info.
Yeah, Franco Bettini, the Ducati test rider, was injured, and obviously yeah. The other test riders have either moved away or moved up to management. So they brought Julian Simon in with permission from Aspar, and he did very, very well in a GP10 test at Jerez and got within 1.6 seconds of Rossi's lap record. Now, for a guy who's – that's his first, as far as we know, that's his first certainly official run on a MotoGP bike, that's pretty damn impressive.
Yeah, no doubt.
And I just thought, okay, we'll have to see how he goes in Moto2, but you could see, imagine the Pramac guys looking over their shoulders a bit, thinking, oh, okay, there's another one coming up and firing for seat.
Yeah.
Really impressive. Apparently they were very, very happy with him. They said the feedback he was given, the technical feedback, was very detailed and very accurate and really helpful. Wow, you know, 125 champion, into Moto2, immediately starts running well, jumps on a MotoGP bike and see how he does. He's not that bad.
Yeah.
And the interesting, I mean, the gap between him at Jerez and Rossi's lap record is a lot smaller than the gap between first and last at the recent Sepang or Qatar tests. So that would kind of put him in mid-pack. I know it's not comparing like with like, but, you know, interesting stuff to see.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's clearly it's not going to happen, but it is a great step up. And we got to remember he's been on 250s before. There was a bit that actually ties in really well, and the timing was good for this. So on Monday night, everybody knows Liam Schubert, who's been on this show a bunch of times. Well, Liam has a new show of his own, which I think is great. And it's kind of with a sister program, if you will, and a good friend of MotoGPOD, which is On the Throttle TV. Liam is doing this live, which is always very impressive, but sometimes rather difficult, on Monday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific time. Now, it's really not going to help my UK friends very much. I think it's like, I don't know.
2 in the morning.
Yeah, 2 in the morning there. But they do archive it. And we will also put a link for that in the show notes. But he did an interview this was Monday, with Jordi, who works for Dorna in their TV production group. And at about the same time, there was a headline at MotoGP.com, and this was discussed in Liam's interview about MotoGP going to HD in 2010. Now, unfortunately, I didn't get in at the beginning of that show. I only got in at the very end to ask one question. The question I asked, which you'll laugh at, Martin, was, mm-hmm. Can we please just have a 365-day subscription instead of this, you know, segmented thing? But he's in TV production, not the web production. He couldn't answer. He said he'd ask. Jordi is a friend of Liam's from back in the day when Liam was joining it in the circus. And so they will have HD in 2010. My question being, that's great for you guys, right? Because they shoot in PAL, which is a video standard. But for us over here in the U.S. and several other countries that run on what's known as NTSC, and I know I'm geeking out here, maybe I'll even have a link to the differences between those two standards, what we get is kind of a very watered-down version. And so I'm hoping they'll figure out a way to do it. But regardless, we're still going to have some great images this year out of MotoGP. They're going to have HD cameras on the bikes. We're not just talking about the the cameras on track side.
They're gonna have now, I hadn't realized. They're going to have the on-bike cameras in HD.
So I highly suggest those of you that read that bit on MotoGP.com, go listen to Jordy talk about this at the MotoLiam, All Things MotoGP thing that is archived, and we'll include the URL for that. So we're going to fill you up with content. You're going to be busy for all weekend. You're going to be trying to watch the race, and at the same time, the races, and at the same, well, this is what to do when you're waiting for the races to come on TV or you can't sleep because all you're doing is thinking about racing. Well, we'll make sure that you have something to do. That's our job here.
I've got to say what I am happy about, having bitten the bullet and subscribed for the season on the HD package, it does give you pretty much full carte blanche access. So you get the classics, you get the video archives, and everything else.
They give you the classics now because they weren't giving the classics before.
On the full HD package, yeah. But if you subscribe to the full season, there's a 10% discount if you were subscribed last season, which I wasn't, and I ended up doing the off-season one as well. But again, yeah, this one, this subscription I paid lasts until, I think, 3 days after Valencia.
Yeah.
And then that's it. And then you have to, you know, like you say, you have to do the off-season package. And
yeah.
If you break it down to a weekly cost, it doesn't sound so painful.
Yeah, I know. And so but I'm in the process of trying to take it. So believe it or not, Jim Race does not yet have a MotoGP.com subscription. So if some lovely benefactor out there would like to cover that for me, feel free to let me know. Anyway, wow. Yet another longish show. I think we're probably going to be at about an hour and a half, but there was a lot to talk about. And the season is, you know, we had that break from PI. And I think we kind of got, not really.
The way they tease us, though, they drop that in. A friend of mine who's an ex-paratrooper said, I've got a good analogy for you. He's discovered this show as well, and he said, PI was the Pathfinders. The main drop's coming in.
Yeah.
You're in the aircraft. The red light's gone on. Everyone's stood and hooked up, and we're just waiting for the green light. And that happens this weekend, Portimao. From then on, we're into the biggest gap we're going to have is 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Between some form of either World Superbike or MotoGP racing. Thank goodness. Oh, it's been a long winter.
You know, it's funny because Bob, way back in the day, I'll say this again because we always get email about it. Bob is shipped out. Jules is massively busy but is helping us in the background keeping the show up. Although he's actually heading off on vacation later. Actually, by the time this show comes out, he will be somewhere in Asia. I'll just leave it at that. Southeast Asia. And so they're off doing stuff, and so you guys are stuck with Martin and I. So just, you know, get used to it. We're not so bad.
I've not managed to get any hate mail yet. I've got to get more opinionated, I think.
Maybe you should ask for some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but absolutely seriously, guys, if there's bits that people don't like or bits that people do like would like to hear more of, I'm like, you know, we're completely driven by events, but we're also guided in what events we cover by people's feedback. And the stuff we've had has been really positive, and it's lovely. Don't get me wrong. You know, my ego needs massaging as much as anybody's. But, you know, if people want to hear more of something or less of something, just let us know.
Yeah, I think what I'll probably get is, like, can we get the Americans off the show, please?
No, that was just me.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, let's wrap this up. Again, we're going to have a whole bunch of links in the show, and so please take advantage of those. They will keep you occupied. You have to watch, if you haven't watched it yet, the Ben and Colin video. In fact, as soon as I get off the phone with you, Martin, I'm going to watch that again because that is so worth it and incredibly funny. Thanks again, and we will talk to you all next week when we'll be able to report on the Portimao race. Martin, thanks again.
Thanks, Jim. Good night, all.
All right. Adios.
MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL. The MotoGP OD podcast and MotoGPOD.com are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners. MotoGP OD isn't affiliated with any of them.